Hello, I'm Christopher Badger.
And I'm Mark Davis.
We're barristers at Six Pump Court, and would like to welcome you to the latest Environment Law News podcast, brought to you in association with LexisNexis.
Thanks, Chris. In this podcast, we'll be looking at the relationship between requests for disclosure under the Environmental Information Regulations 2004 and Legal Professional Privilege, the Committee on Climate Change and its most recent call for evidence, and the latest EU developments on green finance.
First up, we examine a recent case in which the Environmental Information Regulations trumped legal professional privilege. In Brooks Bank against the Information Commissioner, an appellant has successfully argued that privileged instructions to counsel should be disclosed to the public under the Environmental Information Regulations 2004.
Indeed. Now, Brooks Bank is one part of a long-running dispute amongst residents of Moulton in Yorkshire and councillors as to which site in the town should be developed as a supermarket. It culminated in a judicial review quashing the decision of the council to develop a car park, which the council had itself entered into a contract to sell to a developer, subject to planning permission.
Yes. Now, the instructions had been sent to council in late December 2011, early January 2012. Whilst those were what the Information Commissioner case was concerned with, the appellant had actually wanted the advice itself, but it was acknowledged during the proceedings that this fell outside of the scope of the appeal, and so the focus then fell on the instructions. The central issue for the appeal was essentially whether the public interest favoured disclosure, notwithstanding the fact that the instructions were privileged.
Now, as one might expect, it was accepted that there was a clear public interest built into maintaining LPP. However, the appellant, who I'm reliably informed is in fact a solicitor, had strong competing arguments. She asserted that the council had consistently acted unlawfully and against the interests of its electorate. Fairly bold. During the judicial review, it was argued the report prepared by a planning officer as part of the planning permission process had been significantly misleading, which resulted in powerful judicial criticisms of the council's decision and its eventual quashing. Legal advice privilege should be applied where there is a genuine need for advice, but never where it is used to aid misfeasance. It was thought the disclosure of the instructions would reveal whether the council was genuinely seeking an independent opinion or seeking corroboration of their existing view.
And the tribunal was provided with the instructions prior to making its decision and noted that they canvassed two broad issues, neither of which were legally or factually complicated.
Yes, despite the fact that some of these criticisms were held to be wide of the mark, for example, the council were not found to have perpetrated deliberate wrongdoing during the course of the judicial review, nonetheless, the tribunal held that the public interest favoured disclosure for the following reasons, amongst others. Firstly, that considerable time had elapsed since the instructions had been sent. Secondly, the need to protect privilege is less compelling where the public body is really seeking advice on general points of law, and the advice does not depend on any particular sets of facts. Thirdly, to the extent that the matters canvassed were relevant to how a council conducts itself in the future, these were matters where there was every reason for members and residents to understand the broad issues. Fourthly, the exception in the EIR regulations is a qualified exception. Fifth, that there was an emphasis on providing maximum transparency in these circumstances. And sixth and finally, if the appellant was expecting to find a smoking gun, they were likely to be disappointed. However, there can be a public interest in showing that a public authority acted properly in a particular respect, so that unwarranted suspicions can be allayed.
Now, that decision is, in my opinion, and I think you would agree, Mark, surprising. Even if the exception in the Environmental Information Regulations that encompasses legal professional privilege is a qualified exception, and therefore not absolute, there must be the inherent risk that this decision could undermine the fundamental confidence that currently exists in being able to consult lawyers without fear of subsequent disclosure, irrespective of how many years have passed.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. In this case, the council appears to have lost the faith of its residents to such an extent that disclosure has been ordered, at least in part, as a means of demonstrating that on this occasion the authority acted properly. Now, assessing the content of the request for legal advice also appears to be a dangerous and potentially slippery slope.
Right, on to climate change. In fact, the Committee on Climate Change, which has launched a call for evidence on the sixth climate budget.
As everyone will of course be aware, but by way of recap, the UK has adopted a target of net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. The Climate Change Act 2008 requires the Committee on Climate Change to provide advice to the government about the appropriate level for each carbon budget on the path to the long-term target.
The committee must provide its advice on the sixth carbon budget before the end of 2020. And in order to do this, it has launched its call for evidence, with a deadline of the 5th of February.
And the call for evidence itself, there are questions which are divided into five sections, and they are, firstly, climate science international circumstances, then the path to the 2050 target, and delivering carbon budgets, and Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland, and finally, sector-specific questions.
And this, of course, follows extensive criticism by the Natural Capital Committee on DEFRA's environmental progress. Essentially, that there is very little evidence of any actual improvements in the state of our natural capital. According to the NCC, there is in fact worrying evidence of declines in environmental quality.
And you can ally that with the fact that the Committee on Climate Change has already reported that current policies and plans are insufficient to meet the fourth and fifth carbon budgets, which cover the periods 2023 to 2027 and 2028 to 2032.
Quite. Now, I don't think anyone would seriously doubt that transitioning to net zero will be disruptive. But the issue here is that the later concrete plans are left to take the UK to net zero, the more disruptive those plans will inevitably have to be. There's a strong argument that the relevant regulators and the government have to take a much tougher stance now, rather than require a cliff-edge reduction in emissions, say 5 years from now.
And this also comes at a time when the European Environment Agency has published its latest five-yearly report and forecast, warning that a drastic change of direction is required to meet existing policy goals.
On a slightly different note, there's a suggestion that the Committee on Climate Change may not be all that enamoured with the idea of the Office for Environmental Protection. There's a possible concern that the OEP will use reports written by the Committee on Climate Change as a basis for enforcement action against the government, and that in turn risks causing the Committee on Climate Change to be less frank in its language, less upfront and direct with the government, which may have the unintended consequence of reducing the effectiveness of the committee.
But can't that be solved? I mean, might not the answer lie in ensuring that any memorandum of understanding drawn up between the OEP and the Committee on Climate Change requires the OEP to consider the evidence supporting the committee's reports rather than the report itself?
A good question. We'll have to wait and see whether that's the resolution adopted. The final story of the month is that the European Council has now adopted legislative reforms on sustainable finance and investments.
You do like a bit of green finance, don't you, Chris?
But this is interesting. On the 8th of November, the European Council adopted a set of legislative reforms which are a key part of the agenda driving green finance, placing specific legal obligations on financial market participants. And that includes the publication on their website of either A, where the participant considers principal adverse impacts of investment decisions on sustainability factors, a statement of the due diligence policies with respect to those principal adverse impacts, or B, where the participant does not consider adverse impacts of investment decisions on sustainability factors, clear reasons for not doing so. Websites must also include information on policies, a description of the principal adverse sustainability impacts and actions taken, engagement policies, and references to adherence to codes and standards. Financial market participants must also give details of how remuneration policies are consistent with the integration of sustainability risks. And they only have 15 months to bring themselves in line.
Well, it sounds like the powers that be expect the finance industry to green the economy, which is, to my opinion, ducking the fact that there need to be specific policies and targets in place to get us there.
And that's a strong point. I mean, at least the Financial Conduct Authority has already specifically recognised the benefit of common benchmarks, standards and metrics for environmentally sustainable products and activities, and has already committed to reviewing these European reforms. It will be engaging with the work which results from the European Union's Action Plan on Sustainable Finance in quarter one 2020. The standards and requirements being developed at EU level are expected to underpin approaches taken across the UK financial sector.
Well, I think, as we've said before, we can expect this to be one of the hottest environmental topics for 2020.
Thank you for tuning in to this Environment Law News podcast. For more information on any of these stories, or if you would like to discuss any of the topics raised in more detail, please contact Six Pump Court on 0207 797 8400, asking for either Christopher Badger or Mark Davies, or contact our colleagues at LexisNexis in the PSL Environment team.